Are violence and war inevitable? Here's the long view. It's pretty accepted that for well over 200,000 years, hunter-gatherers, which are humans like us, lived in egalitarian societies. So how come, beginning around 12,000 years ago, most of them, within a pretty short period of time, gave up that lifestyle for settled agriculture, and in so doing, moved to a different way of life and new social structures where a dominance hierarchy of the few began to take over from equality for all, which led to exploitation, slavery, violence, war, and all the rest of it? Well, first we have to start with the invention of scarcity, and the answer to that is multifaceted. Broadly speaking, a transformation like that could only have come about as a result of environmental factors pushing people into the imagined greater security that the longer term and more abundant supplies of food and other materials derived from farming would have been capable of producing. The trouble is, once that happened, there was no obvious going back, as it brought with it the creation of hierarchies and states, and rule by those few who in previous societies would have been considered antisocial for their dominating tendencies. That minority would now have much freer rein for their deviant behaviour, resulting in struggles for power, the development of classes and rulers and ruled, and the emergence of what came to be considered natural orders, headed by kings, emperors, pharaohs, and high priests, with the majority living at a lower level of subsistence than as hunter-gatherers. This has been called the invention of scarcity. This, in turn, gave rise to full-scale predatory social systems. First slavery, then feudalism, now capitalism, where the majority have been kept in check by tiny privileged minorities, either by the threat of violence from higher authority and or by ideological constructs or smokescreens such as tribal loyalty or nationalism. In the lens of recorded history, the result of these dominance structures and of the conflicts over wealth and resources that have arisen between the privileged ruling minorities has been and still is large-scale violence and continual wars. And over most of this history, the explanation for this, found in writings, secular and religious, has been that conflict between humans is the natural state of things. Christianity, for example, expressed this through the idea of original sin, while commentators not dependent on religious doctrine tended to come to similar conclusions. For example, the 16th century Italian political writer Machiavelli, in his famous essay The Prince, stated that human beings were, quote, ungrateful, fickle, dissembling, hypocritical, cowardly, and greedy, end quote, and, quote, never do anything good except out of necessity, end quote. Similar views were expressed in the following century by the philosopher Thomas Hobbes in his Leviathan, which argued that human beings are greedy by nature and that human life is a condition of war of all against all. The following century, the economist Adam Smith in The Wealth of Nations also famously insisted that private interest or self-love was natural human behaviour, justifying a society based on the free market, where everyone seeks their own self-advantage regardless of the social and economic inequality that goes with it. Some questioning of these views did begin in the 19th century with the writings of Charles Darwin and early practitioners of the science of anthropology, such as Lewis Henry Morgan. But it was only in the 20th century, with the increased flowering of anthropology and the new science of archaeology, that serious doubt was cast on the belief that human beings were deep down selfish, wicked, and aggressive. As new perspectives emerged from growing evidence of how people had lived and interacted in the pre-farming era, the overwhelmingly longest period of human existence on Earth. Not that the traditional fixed human nature view simply went away, it continued to be expressed in much popular writing in particular. Examples of this between the 1950s and 70s were books like Desmond Morris's The Naked Ape, Conrad Lorenz's On Aggression, Robert Ardrey's The Territorial Imperative, and imaginative fiction like William Golding's Lord of the Flies, and arguably George Orwell's Animal Farm too. It also carried on coming from some scientific sources, for example, Richard Wrangham's 1996 book Demonic Males, Apes and the Origins of Human Violence, and most recently, Richard Overy in Why War, 2024. Such writers tend to see war as having been constant throughout the whole of human history, suggesting that humans are war-prone and have what Overy calls a psychological predisposition for warfare. And this leads that writer to conclude that, quote, if war has a very long human history, it also has a future, end quote. But overall, the last 30 to 40 years have marked a significant shift in perspectives, both among social commentators and scientific experts. Among a slew of studies on this and allied topics, some of them reviewed in The Socialist Standard, are titles like Beyond War, The Human Potential for Peace, Team Human, Survival of the Friendliest, and Ultrasocial. These all tell their own tale. The majority of these writings conclude from their authors' investigations not that human beings are non-violent and non-prone to war per se, but rather that violence and fighting are not their most natural inclination, even if they are capable of being driven to it by circumstances. Even the widely read The Selfish Gene by Richard Dawkins, though often cited as supporting the idea of innate human selfishness, on close examination does no such thing. In fact, it is largely a book about altruism and cooperative behaviour. Even its writer is on record as saying that its title may have been an unfortunate one, and that perhaps a different title such as The Immortal Gene or even The Altruistic Organism might have been more appropriate. Very relevant in this connection too is the work of anthropologist R. Brian Ferguson, who has spent 50 years researching the origins of war and has been called the greatest living scholar of human warfare. In an article in Scientific American in 2018 entitled War is Not Part of Human Nature, Ferguson notes that the overwhelming evidence on war, which he defines as armed conflict and killing sanctioned by society and carried out by members of one group against members of another group, suggests that it was not always present among humans. Instead, it began as a result of societal changes at varying times in different locations, but with its earliest signs appearing around 12,000 years ago, so closely coinciding with humankind's first experiments with agriculture. In an article in 2023 in the journal Public Anthropologist, he states, "Our species is not biologically destined for war. War is not an inescapable part of social existence, and obviously we are capable of war and often choose it. The question is whether evolution tilts us in that direction. I say no." His findings, he says, show that, quote, egalitarian mobile hunter foragers generally don't make war, and that, quote, agriculture and states went along with more war. His most recent book, Chimpanzees, War and History, Are Men Born to Kill, 2023, reiterates this with the conclusion that, quote, men are not born to kill, but they can be cultivated to kill. This is a perspective also echoed by Yuval Noah Harari in his best-selling book, Sapiens, A Brief History of Humankind, 2014. Here, Harari makes a clear statement about humans as essentially flexible creatures, insisting that human behavior is shaped by the society into which we are born and become part of. He goes on to say that if our social arrangements were determined simply by our biology, then there would never have been the wide gamut of behavior patterns, relationships, and cultures which we know about and which can also be witnessed in what we see around us now. Some studies go even further than this, seeing humans as naturally pro-social beings, with cooperation, not competition, peacefulness, not violence, as their intrinsic default. In such studies, qualities such as kindness and empathy are seen as existing naturally in the overwhelming majority of humans, as long as overwhelming forces don't get in the way of it. The historian Tien de Moore, for example, in The Dilemma of the Commoners, 2015, claims that history teaches us that man is essentially a cooperative being, a homo cooperans, that human beings claim togetherness and interaction, and that our spirits yearn for connection just as our bodies hunger for food. This kind of outlook is echoed by Rutger Bregman in his book, Humankind, A Hopeful History, 2021, in which he presents arguments many have found compelling that the innate fundamental default of human beings is to be friendly, communal, and cooperative, and that the outstanding feature of human behavior is the desire to act together and to display tolerance and mutual support, even if circumstances are dire. As part of the evidence for this, he points to the plethora of everyday gestures of help, cooperation, solidarity, and compassion people in all societies all over the world show to one another on a daily basis without any prospect of gain or reward. John Gowdy's Ultra Social, The Evolution of Human Nature and the Quest for a Sustainable Future, 2021, though in most ways a quite different kind of book from Bregman's, echoes a similar message with statements like, our current predicaments are not gene-based. They have risen out of the material base of human economies and the associated cultural adaptations and supporting institutions. And with an insistence that if we have a nature, it is a pro-social one, a natural inclination to be empathetic, associative, and cooperative. Such considerations about human behavior have been accompanied, and often confirmed, by the more detailed and scientific studies of primeval hunter-gatherer societies that modern technological methods have made possible. A different study, for example, analysing evidence of traumatic injuries in 189 individuals from 25 different sites, revealed healed bone treatment, suggesting a story of mutual aid, patience and dedication among those people. This is Victoria Romano and others, Bone Trauma and Interpersonal Care Among Late Holocene Hunter-Gatherers from Patagonia, Argentina, published in the International Journal of Paleopathology, December 2025. It has been estimated that around 1 in 5 hunter-gatherers would have been likely to suffer some kind of injury or disability, and while most wounds would have been the predictable bruises and fractures of daily life, requiring only a short break from everyday activities, others were likely to have been worse, leaving individuals unable to hunt, gather, grind plants, craft tools, etc., etc., for months or perhaps a lifetime. Here we are presented with evidence that those suffering in this way would have been cared for by the community, even if they were not economically useful. Such research, therefore, lends weight to the pro-social arguments many are making about a fundamentally benign human nature. But in the end, whether humans are intrinsically pro-social or simply highly flexible, the evidence is that while violence and war are certainly possible forms of human behaviour, as both history and the present show, coexistence without violence or war also presents itself as another possible form of human behaviour. This was a reality recognised as far back as 1985 in UNESCO's Seville Statement on Violence, which stated it in the following terms. Biology does not condemn humanity to war. It is scientifically incorrect to say that war or any other violent behaviour is genetically programmed into our human nature. And the undeniable fact is that the vast majority of interactions that take place in daily life between human beings are cooperative, peaceful, and harmonious, not rude or cruel or antisocial. We do not normally expect to have arguments or experience serious friction with our fellow humans in the course of our daily activities, and most of the time we don't. And on the relatively rare occasions when that does happen, it stands out, precisely because it is rare. The broader point here is that while we do not say that the kind of society socialists advocate and regard as eminently possible will be entirely argument or conflict free, because no human society could be, we do say that the scope for argument and conflict will be far less than in the competitive, insecure society we live in under capitalism. This society, in both its ethic and its organisation, runs directly contrary to the normal human tendency to help and cooperate with others. It drives people to compete with others, to try to get the better of them and even do them down. And it does this by tempting people with the lure of gain or reward, often financial, so pushing them to behave in ways that divide them from their fellow humans, and often making the success of one into the failure of others. Given this reality, what is truly remarkable and significant is that despite the overwhelmingly powerful pressures capitalism places on people to get the better of others and so not be kind to them, in so many of the actions and connections and competitive situations created for us in our daily lives, most of us still manage to be largely kind to others, to cooperate with them and to share. In a new kind of egalitarian society, one of free and equal access, with no buying and selling or wages or salaries, with cooperative endeavour, and with technology and the abundant resources of the planet used to satisfy need and not for profit-making ends, is it far-fetched to believe that such behaviour will come fully into its own?
You have been listening to World Socialist Radio, produced by the Socialist Party of Great Britain. If you would like to find out more, you can visit our website, spgb.net.